Okay, so we're in Yehoshua Perek Vav, I think we got up to through Pasuk Yud Aleph, if I'm not mistaken, 2 weeks ago. Last week we didn't have a shir, but 2 weeks ago I think we got up to Yud Aleph. Oh, you have it marked off. Good.
My safari opens to where I left it.
Okay, good, beautiful. Okay, so we learned Pasuk Yud Aleph, what we said was essentially that they began circling the city of Yericho. Right, they had this whole delegation of the Kohanim. The Kohanim were blowing the shofaros, and they had these seven Kohanim blowing seven shofaros, and then the Aron Bris Hashem was following behind them, and then the army, which some of the Mefarshim said was Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe, followed behind. They went in front of the Kohanim. And the Ma'asef, which was Shevet Dan, they were all the way at the end. They followed in the end. And essentially, it's interesting because it seems like, you know, almost like everybody, like the whole nation is circling Yericho. So if you look at Pasuk Yud Beis says, Vayashkim Yehoshua Baboker, Vayisua Kohanim es Aron Hashem. So Yehoshua gets up in the morning. He gets up early. Vayashkim, he gets up early in the morning. And the Kohanim carry the Aron Hashem. Now, it's interesting. What many of the Mefarshim do here, the Al-Sheikh and the Malbim in particular, is that they begin to draw distinctions between what happened on day one, and keep in mind, day one is Sunday. Okay, day one is Sunday. Remember, we're doing the, you know, one circle each day, one hakafa each day, and then Shabbos, the seventh day, we're going to do seven hakafas. Right? So day one, they did one hakafa. That was Sunday. Day two, we're about to describe day two right now. As you see in Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, it says clearly it was day two. Vayasobo esair bayom hasheni. Right, so we're talking about day two, and then after that it skips from Yud Dalet to, if you look at Pasuk Tesvav, Vayhi bayom hashvi'i. So it's very strange because we mentioned day one, we mentioned day seven. Now those two we get because day one was the first day, and day seven was the last day. And day seven was much different because they did seven akafos and the walls fell down, and which we'll learn about. So why mention day two? Right? Why? Meaning, if you're not going to memarashach, either mention every day, you know, have the psukim discuss each and every day that they did these hakafos, or just mention day one and day seven. Those were the main days. Day one they began, and day seven they ended. Why mention day two? So many of the mefarshim point out here that day two was actually a little bit different than day one, and the rest of the days followed day two. Meaning, day one was an anomaly. Day one was very strange. Okay, so the Al-Sheikh points out that on day one, everybody. Went around Yericho, right? The whole nation, you know, did this hakafah around Yericho. Yehoshua didn't want that to happen. And if you remember from last week, they kind of like went ahead without Yehoshua realizing what was going on. They kind of went ahead, and everybody was so into it. They just went, you know, everybody did this hakafah. Yehoshua didn't really want the whole nation to do this hakafah. So the Al-Sheikh says, Vayashkim Yehoshua Baboker. Why did he get up early on day two? He got up early on day two to stop everybody from coming. Right, he got up early to make sure that he was in position to say, "Okay, guys, you know, listen, these are the people that are gonna be encircling, you know, the Kohanim and the Aron and whatever. And all you, Chevra, you know, you stand on the side. You can take pictures, you can clap, you know, you can do whatever you want, you know, but don't. But you know, I don't want everybody circling right now." It's interesting. Also, the end of the pasuk, "Vayisua Kohanim es Aron Hashem." So the Malbim has a little bit of a different take on why Yehoshua got up early. He says because at night, where did they go back to? They went back to Gilgal. Like they went back to Gilgal. If you remember, when they first got into Eretz Yisrael, Gilgal was the place where they camped out. Now, Gilgal was not so close to Yericho. I don't know exactly what the distance was, but it's not so close to Yericho. So they traveled from Gilgal to Yericho. They did this hakafah, and then they went back home. You know, home. They went back to the camp in Gilgal. Now, day two, they have to come now from Gilgal all the way back to Yericho to do another hakafah. So that's Vayashkim. They had to get up early because they were in Gilgal. They weren't standing right near Yericho. They were in Gilgal, and they had to travel from Gilgal all the way to Yericho, and that's why they got up early. He mentions also that that another distinction, says the Malbim, between day one and day two is that in day one the Leviim carried the Aron until Yericho, and then the Kohanim took the Aron, and the Kohanim did the Hakafa with the Aron. But he says in day two, so the Kohanim took it already at Gilgal. And the Kohanim transported the Aron the whole time. He says that's why the pasuk says here, "Vayisua Kohanim es Aron Hashem." What's the chiddush of that? Right, we already know that the Kohanim are carrying the Aron Hashem. He's saying no, because here they carried it all the way from Gilgal, as opposed to yesterday when the Levim carried it and the Kohanim took over. Okay, Pasuk Yigimel. B'shiva ha-kohanim nosim shiva shofaros ha-yovlim lifnei Aron Hashem. And again, we have these seven kohanim carrying the seven shofaros before the Aron Hashem. By the way, you notice also the word ha-yovlim, right, which shows also interesting in light of this past week's parsha, or parshias, where we discussed Yovel and the blowing the shofar. So you see this idea of the word Yovel being used in the context of the shofar. So the kohanim stood, they were in front of the Aron. Holchim haloch v'taku b'shofaros. They're walking, they're blowing the shofaros as they're walking. V'hecholutz holich lifnehem. The cholutz, that's the Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. They're the fighters, they're the ones who are walking in front of the kohanim and the Aron. V'hama'asif holich acharei Aron Hashem. And again, you have the ma'asif, the Shevet Dan, that are walking in back, behind the Aron Hashem. Haloch v'taku b'shofaros. And again, the whole way, they're blowing the shofaros, and the Malbim points out also they didn't do this the first day. Right, the second day they're blowing the shofaros the whole time. The whole time that they're walking around, they're blowing the shofaros. Pasuk Yedalad vayasobu es ha'ir bayom hasheni pam achas vayashuvu hamachane. Right, so they did one hakafa on day two. They did one hakafa, and then they went back to the camp again, back to the camp in Gilgal. Right, so every day they're commuting. Right, every day they're commuting from Gilgal. They do this hakafa, they blow the shofaros, and then they go back to Gilgal, and that's what the pasuk says. Ko asu sheishas yamin. Right? This is what they did for the next 6 days. So this is what the Alshach points out, that the second day was really the model for the other days. Right, the things that happened on the first day again were kind of an anomaly. People rushed into it. Everybody kind of was there. Everybody was circling. Everybody was doing the hakafa. Yoshua got up early on day two. He said, okay, we got to make a little bit of order here. You know, this is who I want doing it. I want the chalutz in the front. I want the fighters in the front. I want the kohanim. I want the aron. And that's it. Then the asif in the back, and that's it. I don't want everybody else to do it. Everybody else is going to stand back and watch.
Does anybody make any comment or question about what were the inhabitants of Yericho doing while the Jews were doing this every day?
The Mefarshim don't talk about it. The Pesukim don't allude to anything about the inhabitants of Yericho right now. Right? The only thing we saw was last week. Last week we saw
lookouts.
Where was that?
Solid walls.
Yeah, in Pasuk Yud, the only thing we have in Pasuk Yud is Ha'om Tziva Yehoshua Leimor Lo Sariu V'Lo Sashmiu V'Skolchem V'Lo Yetzim Mipichem Davar Adyom Omri Aleichem Hariu V'Hariosa. So there we have on day one, right? We have Yehoshua telling all the people to kind of keep it down a little bit. So even though they're blowing the shofar, you know, the seven kohanim blowing the seven shofaros, but I guess if the whole nation was there making noise, that would have been like, you know, that would have been maybe too alarming for the people. You know, now listen, I don't know, if I'm in Yericho and I hear, you know, shofaros blowing outside, I might think it's strange. You know, I don't really exactly know what's going on. I don't know, maybe they had lookouts, they didn't have lookouts, I don't know. I'm not sure. But they certainly didn't attack. Right? They certainly didn't attack. So maybe they didn't realize. You know, they hear these noises from outside the walls. You know, who knows what the Meshugaim are doing in the desert? You know, they're blowing their horns. But, you know, or they were scared. You know, or they were scared. But we don't know exactly.
This wasn't an attackable war anyway. They were going to just blow the shofar and get the city.
So yes. I mean, we'll see that there is some, there's a little bit of fighting here. We'll see in a little bit. But, I mean, you're right. It's not a classic war. That's true. It's certainly not a classic war in terms of strategizing and things like that.
Was there any as to why Reuven, Gad, and Manasseh were ahead and Dan was left?
Yeah, I mean, the reason why those three, or two and a half, were in the front were because, again, they were the ones who were, Moshe had them take an oath that if they are going to settle on the other side of the Jordan River, when it came time to settling the land, then they have to go in front and they have to fight for everybody, which they did. Now, why Dun was at the back, I'm not sure exactly why Shevet Dun. Shevet Dun was the Ma'asif. He was the Shevet Dun was always the one in the back. You know, I'm not sure they were good at Hashav Zaveda, perhaps. I'm not sure why exactly it was them. Okay. Pasuk Tesvav. Vayhi Bayom Hashvi. So now it's the seventh day. Okay, the seventh day we know is Shabbos. Vayashkimu Ka'alos Hashachar. They get up early again, early in the morning. Alos Hashachar at dawn. Vayasobu es ha'ir kamishpat hazeh sheva pe'amim. And they do the same hakafa that they've been doing, one per day for the last 6 days. Now they do it seven times. Rak bayom hahu, sovu es ha'ir sheva pe'amim. And the pasuk emphasizes that they only did this on that day. Right? The seven hakafas were only on that day. Right? The Al-Sheikh says, you know, you don't think, you know, you might think that maybe they did more on the other days. No. Right? The seven hakafas were only on this day. The Tzudah HaSevet says very pasha, that's why they had to get up early. Right? It says they got up early at Alos HaShachar. Right? Hoshana Rabbah, we have to daven early. Because you got to do all the Hoshanos, you know, seven times. So the same thing here, they had to do seven hakafos, they had to get up early to make sure that they had enough time to do all of these seven hakafos.
Actually, the pasuk before says, Ko asu sheshes yomim. So they did 6 days. So that's the second day to the seventh.
Right.
And here you're saying that it changed on the seventh. So how could it say,
No. Right. Yomim? So good question. So I think the sheshes yomim is including day one, at least in terms of the fact that it was one hakafa. That's what I think. I think it's including day one, that from day one through day six, they did one hakafa, and now day seven, they do seven hakafa. So that's a good question, but I think that's what the pasuk is saying. Okay, so this is happening on Shabbos, right? It's happening on Shabbos, which is the Yom HaShvi. You know, why exactly it happens on Shabbos is not so clear. The Mepharshim don't talk about why. All the Mepharshim mentioned that it happened on Shabbos. Mepharshim don't really explain why it happened on Shabbos. You know, I was thinking that perhaps maybe even just to, when you have something like this, which is really shows the might of the Ribono Shel Olam, right? The power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what better day to express HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in this world than Shabbos? Right? Shabbos is the day when we all take a break and we try to see Hashem in the world. So here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt that this was the appropriate day for this miracle to happen. You know, perhaps also, we mentioned last week that the fact that it was on Shabbos involved a little bit of Chilul Shabbos, right? Normally, you know, walking around the city, blowing shofaros, these are not normally the things that you're allowed to do on Shabbos. And the wall's going to fall down, they're going to fight. I mean, this is, this is not exactly what needs to be done on Shabbos. So perhaps also part of the message here is that the Ribono Shel Olam is telling them, listen, you know, in the Midbar, and we mentioned this briefly last, 2 weeks ago, the Midbar was a miraculous place. The Midbar, you had everything given to you on a silver platter. You had the mun, you had the slav, you had everything. You know, I cleaned your clothes for you. You know, the clouds got rid of all of the bad animals. You know, the wild animals. Everything was taken care of for you in the Midbar. Eretz Yisrael, you gotta roll up your sleeves. Now, Eretz Yisrael is the land, even though it is a land of miracles, but it's also the land of Teva as opposed relative to the Midbar. This is a land where you have to roll up your sleeves and you have to work the land and you have to make things grow. It's not so simple. And that might entail, in certain occasions, Chilul Shabbos. Right? You see now, you see Chayalei Tzahal, right? Jewish, from guys, they're in yeshiva, they have to leave yeshiva, they go into the army, and they have to do, operations Friday night. You know, they're doing things on Shabbos, if necessary. And of course, they try to minimize the Chilul Shabbos if they can. Right? But if you're in a war, if you're in a battle, that's, you don't think about, it's Sakonas Nefashos. You're not thinking about I'm going to shoot left-handed. You don't think like that, right? You're in war, so it could be that part of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching them is that sometimes when you're in a situation, you're in Eretz Yisrael now, you're in a land, and you have to roll up your sleeves, you got to make everything happen yourselves. You know, listen, you hope that it doesn't involve Chilul Shabbos, but it might, and sometimes you might have to compromise certain things in order to save lives, in order to help people. Right, just like Hatzalah's Mechal Shabbos, Chayalei Tzahal Mechal Shabbos, if they have to. You know, nobody wants them to, they don't want to, but you have to do what you have to do. And then perhaps that was also part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, lesson to them, kind of like, slapping them in the face a little bit, to wake them up. That, listen, this is not going to be, it's not just going to be a silver platter anymore. This is not just going to be easy street. You know, you're going to have to work hard, you might even have to do things that you don't want to do, but you have to do what you have to do in order to make this land inhabitable. Okay. Pasuk Tes Zayin, Vayihi Bapam Hashvius. So now the seventh time, right? It's after the seventh hakafa. Toku hakohanim bashofaros. The kohanim blow the shofaros. Vayomer Yehoshua el Ha'am Hariu. Okay, and Yehoshua tells the nation Hariu. He tells them to blow a trua. So the kohanim are blowing a tkiya. The nation, the other people there, they have, they must have had some sort of shofaros as well. They blow a teruah. Ki nasan Hashem lochem es ha'ir. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you the city. Now, there's a little bit of an issue here. What exactly what exactly is happening, because right, we're going to see in a couple of psukim that right before the walls fall, what's going to happen is that the Kohanim are going to blow a Tkiyah Gedola. Okay, and the pasuk talks about this in pasuk Chaf. By the pasuk Chaf, if you just take a look at pasuk Chaf for a minute, the pasuk says Vayara Ha'am Vayisku Bashofaros. The nation again blows the shofaros. And then when the nation hears the shofar, they blow a trua gedola, and then vatipolachoma tachteha. So that's what comes immediately preceding the wall falling. So what's happening now in Pasuk Tezayin? Pasuk Tezayin almost sounds like the same thing, right? That Yoshua is telling them, you know, you hear the shofar and make a trua because Kadosh Baruch Hu gave you the city. So it seems that this was kind of like a preliminary blowing. The Malbim says this wasn't the Tkiyah Gedola that's going to cause the walls to fall down. That's not what's happening just yet. Why not? Here, Yehoshua was basically just making an announcement to them. He was just telling them, listen, Kinasan Hashem Lachem Esa'ir, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give you this city, be happy. And he says that the Malbim says that this Teruah, Hariu, right? Vayim Yehoshua Ha'am Hariu, that this true is really a true of simcha. It's not like the battle cry. Right? This is a true of simcha, that listen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give you the city, rejoice. You know, be happy that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give you the city. Now, why wasn't this, you know, what's he waiting for? So, we're going to see in a minute, that Yehoshua now, he takes kind of a, you know, he kind of puts things on pause, and he gives them a whole speech. He gives them a whole speech now. Okay? And we'll see what the speech is. So keep in mind, they've already finished the seventh hakafah. Right? Now everybody's like kind of waiting, you know, like the anticipation is growing here. You know, everybody's excited. The walls are going to fall down, or maybe they don't even know exactly what's going to happen, but they know something's going to happen, and they know that they've been doing this. This is the seventh day, each day one time. Now we've done it seven times. Something big is going to happen now. Yehoshua tells them, I want you to, you know, to blow a trua out of simcha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give you the city, but. And now Yehoshua puts everything on pause, right? He hits the brakes, and he says, Chevra, listen up for a minute. Pasuk Yud Zayin. The Haisa Ha'ir Cherem. Says Yehoshua, this city is going to be Cherem. Now what's Cherem? So Cherem means it's kind of like it's set aside, it's out of the picture, right? So what's Cherem here mean? So there's a question exactly in the Mefarshim, what exactly the Cherem refers to. The Radak says that we're going to see in a few psukim later that the city, you're right, Yehoshua is gonna you know, take some sort of an oath or a curse, you know, one who rebuilds the city, that Yericho can never be rebuilt. You can't rebuild Yericho. Okay, we'll see in a little bit why that is. So the Radak says that's what it's referred to. That's what this pasuk is referring to. The Haisa Ha'ir Cherem. The city is gonna be Cherem, meaning that this city, once destroyed, can never be rebuilt. Let's keep going. He v'chol asher ba l'Hashem. It, the city, and everything in it belongs to the Ribbono Shalom, belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rak Rachav Hazona Tichye, He V'chol Asher Yita Babayis. He says, Yeshua says, with one exception, and you're going to kill everyone. You're going to kill everyone in the city, with the exception of Rachav the Zona, who we learned about back in the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua. She, everyone who's with her in the house. Why? Ki hech be'asa es hamalachim asher shalachna. Yeshua says, because she hid the malachim that we sent. She hid the malachim that we sent. Okay. So now, very interesting, right? The city can never be rebuilt. Yeshua is telling you. He's giving them this whole speech. Now, guys, you're about to go into the city. I'm just telling you right now. The city can never be rebuilt. We're going to destroy it, and that's it. Done. Okay? Number one. Number two, everything in the city belongs to the Ribbono Shel Olam, which means put your hands in your pockets, right? Don't take anything. Okay, we're going to see a little bit more about that in Pasuk Yudches. Don't take anything. You're not allowed to take any of the booty. You're not allowed to take anything from Yericho. Everything is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And just Rachav we're going to save. Now, why was everything so holy? You know, everything is Kodesh Lashem. Everything is Hektish, right? Why? Why is that? You know, why is everything Kodesh Lashem? Why can't they take some of the booty? So we'll see a little bit more about this. But Rashi is a very interesting pshat. And Rashi says that because this happened on Shabbos, right? He's quoting Chazal. Because this happened on Shabbos, since the defeat of the city was on Shabbos, and Shabbos has a certain Kedusha to it, right? So therefore, everything, all of the items in the city attain some sort of Kedusha. Because the defeat of the city, because the city fell on Shabbos, everything got a Kedusha to it. Now why exactly that is, and you know why it had to be like that, it's not so clear exactly why. But he says, because it was Shabbos, everything gets a Kedusha, all the items get a Kedusha, and everything is going to go to Hashem. We're going to see that whatever can be used for Hashem goes to Hashem, and everything else is going to be destroyed. Okay? Now it's very interesting. We don't find any psukim that Hashem told Yahushua to say this. Right? We don't find anything. Hashem didn't tell Yahushua to say this. Yahushua made this up. Right? The Radak says Yahushua came up with this on his own. Right? This was his own chiddush. This was not from the Ribbono Shel Olam. This was his own chiddush. We'll see later towards the end of the perek that HaKadosh Baruch Hu agreed with him. Right? It says at the end of the perek that God gave his stamp of approval, that he agreed with what Yahushua was doing. But why did he do it? So he quoted, the Radak also says, like Rashi, this Chazal from the Tanchuma, that since it happened on Shabbos, everything got a certain kedusha to it. But then he suggests something else. He says that just like when a person makes is baking bread. So what do? You have to remove a little piece that's going to be holy, right? You have to remove a little piece that's going to be holy, and you're supposed to give that to the Kohanim. Nowadays we don't have Kohanim that are Tahor, so we burn it, right? But you're supposed to give that to the Kohanim. You're supposed to take off a certain thing in the beginning, and that's going to be sanctified. That's going to be holy, right? Just like Bikurim, we have Shavuos coming up, the mitzvah of Bikurim. The farmer takes his first fruit, he sanctifies it. We have the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen. In Judaism, the thing that happens first is very often sanctified. The thing that happens first is holy. Why? To show that it's God, it's not us. Right? Our first child was really thanks to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Our first fruits, even though we worked hard in the field, it's thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu making it grow. So here too, Yahushua says, I don't want anybody to touch anything. Right? Everything is going to go to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Why? Because this is the first city that we're conquering in Eretz Yisrael. This is the challah. This is the challah that we're being mafresh. This is that holy piece that we're going to be mafresh. Everything goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whatever he can use in the Mishkan or whatever, will go to him, and everything else we're going to get rid of. We're going to burn. Nobody's going to touch anything. Because this is sanctified, this is holy. This is the beginning of our conquest of Eretz Yisrael, and we're seeing everything is Yad Hashem. Everything happens because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what he suggests. The Ralbag has a fascinating pshat in why Yahushua did not allow anybody to touch anything. And the Ralbag says, because what's going to happen? The people defeat the city of Yericho. And then what do they? They loot the city. Right? Everybody's dead, so they loot the city. They're going to take all the money. They're going to take any weapons that they might have in Yericho. And now look at Bnei Yisrael. You know, they're well off. They have money. They have new weapons. And they have all these things. And now when they conquer the second city, what are they going to think? Oh, how come we were successful in the second city, and the third city, and the fourth city? Because look at all the things that we got from Yericho. Look, we got these new weapons, and we have all this money. Look at all the things that we can do now. So Yahushua didn't want that. Like, just like this one is a miracle, just like this defeat is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he wants them to recognize that each and every city that they conquer is going to be Yad Hashem. Again, they're going to have to fight a little bit more than they're fighting here, but everything's going to be Yad Hashem. Don't think that it's you. Don't think it's Kochi Votzem Yadi. Don't think, hey, it's because of those great weapons that we got from Yericho, or all the money that we got from Yericho. That's not what's causing your success. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He also mentions that perhaps, you know, why, how come Yericho can't be rebuilt? So he says that might be also to scare the other people. You know, once the people, the other nations of Eretz Canaan hear that the Jews came in and they wiped out the city and they burned it down and they made a proclamation that this city can never be rebuilt, that's going to scare people. Right? That's a little bit of a scare tactic according to the Ralbag. Okay. It's interesting. We mentioned Rachav Azona here, right? The fact that Rachav was going to be saved, she and her entire house. Why? Because she hid the Malachim. So the Malbim points out that here it doesn't mention any oath that the spies took. If you remember, the spies swore to her that they were going to save her. Sacrament doesn't mention the Shavua, and we'll see in a little bit that the Shavua is referenced a little bit later. Sacrament, we don't mention the Shavua here. So he says that really, really Rachav deserved to be saved herself. Why? The Malbim says because she converted. Rachav converted. In fact, Malbim and others say that she converted way back when the Meraglim came, when the spies came into the land. Rachav already converted right then and there. So she deserved to be saved because she converted. She's a Jewish girl now. She converted. But what about everybody else? What about her property? What about her family members who had not converted yet? So that's in the merit of her hiding the spies. And that's what he says. The Racham Hazonah really deserved to be saved herself. But now, ki hechbaso es hamalachim asher shalachnu, right? She hid them. So that's a special schus, not only for her, but that even saved her property, that even saved her family members. That saved everyone. Okay, let's see Pasuk Yud Ches. V'rak atem, says Yoshua. Shimru min acherem, penta harimu. Right? The language is very repetitive in this Pasuk. Seemingly very repetitive. Shimru min acherem, be very careful. Right? Be very careful not to touch the cherem, not to touch any of the booty. Penta harimu, lest you violate this. Ulekachta min acherem, and you'll take from the cherem, you'll take from this booty that's been set aside. Misamta mesmachane Yisrael lecherem, and you'll make the Machane Yisrael, you make the Jewish camp into cherem. Va'achartem osa, and you'll cloud it. The Alshich says here that why does it say shimru? Normally the pasuk would say, you know, he shamru with a hey, you know, you should be careful. Why shimru? Shimru almost implies like you're enacting something, you're doing something. So the Alshich says that really here Yehoshua is telling them that I want you to stay so far away. And he says this is why also the pasuk is repetitive. Because Yehoshua was nervous. Because what happens? You go into the city and there's money. There's money sitting there. There's gold. There's silver. There's silver. There's there are nice kelim. There's beautiful weapons. Right? All this stuff is there. A nice car. You walk in, right? There's a beautiful car sitting in the driveway. So what's going to happen? Your Yetzirah is going to start pulling you. Well, I'll take one thing. I'll stick it in my pocket. Nobody will know. Right? Let me just take a little bit of money. Let me just take a little bit of this. Let me just take a little bit of that. So Yehoshua says, no, shimru. You have to enact, you know, fences and guardrails. You know, just like the Alshich says, just like the Rabbanan do, right? Rabbanan come along and what do? They create guardrails around the Torah so that you don't violate the Torah. So that's what he says, shimru. You have to do that to yourself. You know, nowadays, you know, a lot of people complain. Oh, the rabbis, they're so restrictive. You know, the rabbis tell us, you know, we have so many derabbanans. Why do we have so many derabbanans? Right? High school kids love this argument. You know, why do we have some rabbis? Why are the rabbis so strict? You know, the Torah gave us laws. Let's keep the Torah laws. Well, the rabbis had to add on this and add on that and add on the other thing. They added on so many restrictions. Right? It makes our lives miserable. Right? All these rabbinic laws. Life would be easy if we just had to keep the Torah laws, right? But what do you see? The Alshul says you see the importance of these gedarim, the importance of fences. Because what's going to happen? If you don't make these fences, you don't make these gedarim, what's going to happen? A person's going to sin. You're going to do something. You're going to take a little bit. Shimru. No, you have to set up. You have to set up guardrails. You have to set up things. You have to make sure that you don't take that which is not yours. Remember, everything was supposed to go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything was for the Ribono Shel Olam. You start messing now with that stuff. You start taking that stuff. And you're going to push away the Shechina. It's not going to be good. Pasuk Yates. V'chol kesef v'zoha v'chol nechoshes uvarzel. Kodesh u'lashem, otzar Hashem yavo. Now all metals, right? Gold, silver, you know, bronze, copper, right? All of these things, iron, right? All of these types of, not bronze, I'm sorry, copper and iron, all these types of metals, these were metals that can be used in the service of Hashem. These were things that can be used in the Mishkan. So these things, these are all Kodesh u'lashem, these are all holy, sanctified to the Ribono Shel Olam. Otzar Hashem Yavo, put them into the treasury. I put them in the treasury of Hashem, the treasury of the Mishkan in the Ohel Moed. The Radak says there was a precedent for this because when the Jews defeated Midian, when Bnei Yisrael defeated Midian, they did the same thing. They took all of the valuables and they donated it to the Mishkan. Everything went to the Mishkan. Okay, so these are things that are fitting to be in the Mishkan, and that's where they belong. Pasuk Chaf, Vayara Ha'am. Yoshua's speech is over. Right? He tells them, listen guys, don't touch the city. We're going to destroy it. Everything's going to go to Kodesh LaHashem. Never rebuild the city. Now let's move on. Vayora ha'om vayisku ba'shofaros. And now, what happens? Now, they start blowing the shofaros. Vayichishmo ha'om es kol ha'shofar vayariu ha'om trua gidola. So the Kohanim start blowing the tekiah. This is the tekiah gidola. Right? That symbol that's signifying the end of Yericho. And when that happens, the nation blows a trua gedola, and you have these sounds, you know, molding together. Patipol hachoma tachteha, and the wall just falls. Right? The wall just crumbles. Vayal ha'am ha'ira, ish negdo vayil kedu es ha'ir. And now they have to fight a little bit. Because now what happens? The walls fall, and now Bnei Yisrael rushes in. Right? That's what the pasuk says. Vayal ha'am ha'ira, ish negdo. Right? Everybody goes and they fight. They fight with the people that are there, that are in the city, that are across from them. And now I'm sure at that time, the people in the city were probably gripped with fear at this point. The walls just, you know, miraculously fall down. All the walls of the whole city fall down. In fact, the Mefarshim say that the walls, again, Yericho was completely encircled by these thick walls. The walls fell down around the whole city. And there's Jews, you know, Bnei Yisrael was all around the city. Everybody rushes in at the same time. I mean, imagine like they were completely taken by surprise, the people of Yericho. Even if they were expecting something, you know, you expect something, you expect it, you know, on one gate, on one side, on one wall, you don't expect that everything's going to happen at once and converging all at once. But that's exactly what happened. It's very interesting that, you know, just the how did the walls fall? The walls fell with these sounds molding, right? It's the tkia of the Kohanim, the trua of the nation. It's all these things coming together and then the walls falling. So I thought also the imagery perhaps that the Navi is trying to conjure up here is that, you know, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu works miracles in this world, or when HaKadosh Baruch Hu does everyday things that are really miracles, right? It's really a confluence of different sounds. It's really like different ideas, different things coming together, different people interacting, right? Just like you have in a symphony, you have all the different sounds of the instruments that are coming together. Everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, everything that he works out has multiple moving parts. And the HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to work out all of those parts at the same time for things to happen immediately. You know, anybody, you know, I just paid a shiva call not long ago to the Boim family and just describing, you know, how they, you know, the tragedy that happened in that family, but describing, you know, how they, you know, how they found the brother and the information, and it happened to be a Chabad guy who was there, and they were able to reach him, and he dropped what he was doing, and he went, and he, you know, they saw the Yad Hashem in so many different ways, so many variables and moving parts in the story that enabled it to come to fruition. And that's, I think, part of the message, that you have the Tkiah and the Trua together. You have all of these variables, all these moving parts together that make HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan come to fruition. It's not just, you know, there's so many moving parts, there's so many things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does at once to make things come together. Oh, they defeat the city. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vayacharimu es kol asher bo'ir, me'ish v'yad isho minar v'yad zaken, v'yad shor v'asevach hamor l'ficharev, they kill everyone. Right, they kill all of the people. They kill all of the animals. They kill everyone. Pasuk Chav Beis, Vilishnayim ha'anoshim hamaraglim es ha'aretz, Amar Yehoshua, Bo'u Beis ha'isha hazona. Now it's time to save Rachav. Now it's time to save Rachav. First they have to fight. So first they fight. Now it's time to save Rachav. Who's going to save Rachav? Those same two guys. Those two same two maraglim. Right, fascinating. Why did Yehoshua go to those two? So some of the Farshim say that they were the ones who took the oath. Oh, okay, good. So some of them say that they're the ones who took the Shavua, they took the oath. So number one, they have to fulfill their promise. They promised the Rachav, so they have to fulfill their promise. But it could be also, she saved them, so they're paying her back. It's got to be them. Right? It's got to be them. They have to pay back the chesed that she did to them, now doing the chesed to her, that they're going to go and they're going to save her. It's interesting, here it calls them Anoshim. Earlier in Pasuk, Yud Zayin, it called them Malachim. By Malachim, which can also mean, right, Shluchim, agents or messengers. Okay, here it calls them Anoshim. And later, if you look at Pasuk Chav Gimel, it calls them Ne'orim. By Avohu HaNe'orim. Right, so why all the different languages? So some of the Mefarshim say, I believe the Malbim says this, that earlier they were called Malachim. Why? Because they really were great people. And that's also, he says, why they're called Anoshim. Anoshim always means Chashuvim. They're significant, they're important. Why were they such great people? Because they went to the house of a Zona, right, who was known for her illicit relations with people, and they didn't act on their Yetzer Hara. They probably had a Yetzer Hara when they were there, right, to be with her. They didn't act on that Yetzer Hara. So that's why they're called malachim. When they were there, they didn't do anything wrong. They didn't sin. So they're malachim. They're anoshim chashuvim. They're important people because of what they did. And now in the next pasuk, they're called ne'arim. Why are they called ne'arim? So some of them say that that if you look at Pasuk Chaf Gimel, I'm sorry, let's look at Chaf Beis, what do they do? Go to the house of the Isha Zona. And what does Yoshua tell them? Take out Rachav and everything that she has, all of her possessions. What do they do? Pasuk Chav Gimel. Vayavo hane'orim hamaraglim. Vayotziu es Rachav ve'es aviha ve'es ima ve'es acheha ve'es kol ha'shila ve'es kol mishpechoseha. Wow. They're going above and beyond here. Right? They're taking out her. Now they save her mother, her father, her brothers, everything that she has. And then it says ve'es kol mishpechoseha. What's that? Sounds like even like her extended family, like all the cousins, you know, everybody had kind of piled into Rachav's house. They had a big party, you know, maybe like a Hanukkah party. You know, they had a big party right before this destruction. Everybody's, all the cousins are in the house, and these two guys save everyone.
That was the right? The deal was whoever's in the house will be saved.
Oh, right. So that's true. That's true. And that's why in the end, Yehoshua agreed to what they did. But in the beginning, Yehoshua's like kind of taken aback. Because here he tells them to save her and everything that, you know, everything that's with her. You know, again, Yoshua may not have known exactly what their oath to her was. But then what did they do? They went above and beyond. And it says that's why they called it Ne'arim. Ne'arim because they went above and beyond. Sometimes kids get a little carried away. So Yoshua said, you know, thought that these guys were getting a little bit carried away. Later he realized that they were doing that which was right.
Rabbi,
yeah.
She's in the
wrong. Yeah.
How did they trust her?
Right. So good question. But we saw, you know, earlier in the Sefer, when we learned about that incident when they first came to her house, it was very clear from everything that she did that she was going above and beyond to protect them, to hide them, to make sure that they were safe. And they recognized right away that she was somebody that could be trusted. Now they recognized that right away in what she was doing. She could have given them away, you know, at the time, but she didn't. She went, you know, she risked her life, actually, we learned. She put her life on the line to save these total strangers. You know, and especially once she expressed that desire to convert, they realized that we have somebody here who's a chashuva person here. It's not, she did tshuva, you know, from all the things that she did wrong. The Radak says they're called Ne'arim because Ne'arim just means, he says, you know, it means that they served. That, you know, they were probably the servants of Yehoshua, the servants of one of the other Gedolim. Okay. Pasuk Chav Dal v'ha'ir sarfu va'esh v'chol asheba, and they set the city on fire, right? They burned the entire city, everything that was in the city. Rak hakesev ha'azav u'klei ha'nechoshes v'ha'barzel nosnu otzer beis Hashem, with the exception of the precious metals that we discussed earlier that were being donated to Hekdesh, so those things were donated. Pasuk Chav Hei v'esrach v'azonu v'es beis aviyah v'es kol ha'shela hechiyah Yehoshua, right? So Rachav, her father's home, everything that she had, Yehoshua saved. Vateshev bekerav Yisrael ad hayom hazeh, and she dwelled among the Jewish people until today. Right, meaning she and her descendants stayed within the Jewish people. Ki hechbiya es hamalochim asher sholach Yehoshua l'ragel es Yericho. And it's interesting because here it attributes her salvation to Yehoshua. It says hechiyah Yehoshua. So what do you mean hechiyah Yehoshua? So some say hechiyah Yehoshua means that Yehoshua commanded them that they should fulfill the promise. He's the one who sent the two guys, the two spies, back in and said, listen, you guys go and save Rachel. She was the one who hid you. Some say it was because of that. Some say that afterwards Yehoshua was the one who arranged for Rachel and her family to survive. She's the one who he set them up. He gave them a place to stay. He gave them food. He gave them he gave them money to live on. So some say it was because of that, and some say, based on Chazal, that Yehoshua actually married her. The Medrash says that Yehoshua married her. So some say Hechiya Yehoshua, that he gave her life, meaning that he married her, and that gave her a whole new stamp of approval. In fact, some say that once all of the great people, the Gedolim of that time, saw Yehoshua marrying her, they realized, okay, so they, you know, people started marrying into the family. They converted everybody. And they, you know, they were immediately accepted.
Why does the pasuk say,
"Oh, good question."
Good question.
So some of the mafarshim say, I don't remember now who, that some say a transition. Yeah, some say that at first she converted right away. She converted even when the meraglim were there, but the rest of her family hadn't converted yet. So some say that until they converted, they put them outside the camp. They made a little, like, you know, like a refugee camp for them. They put them outside, and then after they converted, then they brought them in and they settled them among the rest of the Jewish people. So yes, some say like that. Okay, let's finish up the perek. Vayashva Yehoshua ba'es ahile. More Yehoshua now takes a shvua. Okay, and some say the shvua here was really a klal. It was like a curse. I mean, you listen to this language. What does he say? Arur ha'ish lifnei Hashem. Cursed is the person before God. Asher yakum uvana es ha'ir hazos es Yericho. A person who gets up and rebuilds the city of Yericho will be cursed. What's the curse? Wow, listen to this. Bivachoro yasdena. When he lays the foundations of the city, his firstborn will die. Uvitziiro yatziv dolaseha. And when he puts on the finishing touches, when he puts on the gates, the doors, his youngest child will die. Right? The curse that if you rebuild Yericho, everybody's going to die. All of your children are going to die. He didn't want the city rebuilt. The question is why. So some quote the Rambam. Some of the Mefarshim quote the Rambam that the reason why Yehoshua did not want the city rebuilt is because he wanted people to always be able to come back to this site and to see the destruction, to see the walls, right? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu miraculously made them crumble, sink into the ground. He wanted them to see that, right? I was thinking, much like, you know, we have like the concentration camps. You know, we don't want anybody to touch the concentration camps. We want it to be left exactly as is. Why? So people can always go back there and see what it was. Right? If you knock them down, you rebuild them, you build houses there, no one's going to know what was there. So here Yehoshua wants Yericho to remain in its state of destruction as is. And this way people will come, they'll be able to see, they'll be able to recognize the nace that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, and we wanted to stay like that. Why the curse of the children? Why are we cursing the children? So Yehoshua says that a person who wants to build Yericho is doing it for themselves. They're doing it for their own name. They want to be the person, the developer, that rebuilt Yericho. Right? This miraculous city, the miraculous defeat of Yericho, they want to be the one to rebuild it. Right? So says Yehoshua, that's not how you leave a legacy in this world. You don't leave a legacy in this world by trying to erase that with that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu did and just to promote yourself. You leave a legacy in this world. How? Through your good deeds, through the chinuch that you educate your children. And if you don't recognize that, you're going to lose your children. That's the midah keneged midah. Right? You try to promote your name in other ways, not by working on yourself, not by working on your kids, but by just, you know, pushing your name out there that I did this and I did that and I did the other thing. You're going to lose your kids. You're going to lose your children. And then the final pasuk in the perek, Vayhi Hashem es Yehoshua. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was with Yehoshua. Vayhi Shav'o b'chol ha'aretz. And here the Mefarshim say that here HaKadosh Baruch Hu agreed with everything that Yehoshua did in this whole perek. If you remember, some of the things Yehoshua came up with on his own. This whole business with the city and not rebuilding it and the people not touching anything in the city. This was Yehoshua's chiddush. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't command this. But at the end of the perek, Hashem says, Yehoshua, you did good. Right? This was the first battle, the first city to fall. You did a good job. Not only did you do a good job, but he shamo b'chol ha'aretz. Yehoshua's name started spreading. People were scared. People recognized who Yehoshua was and how great he was and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to do to the rest of Eretz Yisrael to give it to the Jewish people. Okay, we'll stop here for tonight. Amir Hashem, next week. Next week there won't be a shift because next week is Motzai Shavuos. But Amir Hashem, the week after, we'll pick up with Parag Zion. When? The week after Memorial Day. Aha. Uh-huh. Suffolk Shear Memorial Day. What do you think?